I'm going to talk about faith tonight mostly, but its other side is doubt. So I was leading us through a little bit of the hindrances during the talk, during the meditation. Doubt can come up in all kinds of very subtle ways underneath, just ways we're not believing in ourselves, especially. Really, really helpful to notice that. It can be very subtle, like not even exactly in words. Just a sense of, oh, I've been doing this all this time. I should know, I should be able to get concentration, or whatever kinds of things. Or I'm too new at this. I don't know what I'm doing. Or anything like that. That's a little bit undermining. Being able to notice that in our meditation, and just as the Buddha did on his night of awakening, the Mara came with so many attacks of various kinds to try to derail the Buddha from awakening. And the last one was to try to fill him with doubt, to say, "Who are you to wake up?" And that's the moment where the Buddha touched the earth. The earth is my witness. And that was the moment where he woke up, where doubt did not win. Faith won. So it's the word in Pali in the ancient language of the Buddha, as Saira just said, the word is sadha. It's like Buddha, except S-A instead of B-U at the beginning. And just tuning into those some of the teachers who know the Pali language way better than I do. The word faith is like maybe not a complete translation of that Pali word. So, other words like confidence, trust, conviction, like they're all contained in this concept of what faith is. And it can the word can rub people's the wrong way sometimes because of whatever experiences they might have had with, being expected to have a certain kind of faith that didn't work for them at some point in life. I was talking last time I was here about the religions that we grew up with, or non-religion that we grew up with, and people got just, brief moment to talk about that with each other in breakout rooms. So this is a little bit of a follow-up on that, just considering what we may have been dealt in our early years, what faith meant, and what it means in our practice here. And if you're it, we're here on a Sunday night. We're not doing something else. We're showing up for a meditation group. So we all have faith at some degree. We may also have doubt. We probably do in various ways. But yeah, we're all called to be here. So the faith is a huge part of what allows that to happen. It's one of the five, in the Buddha's many lists, one of the five spiritual faculties. So it's faith and confidence as one, mindfulness, effort or energy, concentration or having a gathered mind, and wisdom or discernment. So faith is a big deal. It's up in the greatest hits here, along with mindfulness and wisdom. Faith is a factor that's really important for carrying us through. It has a lot of different meanings in English, like complete trust or confidence in someone or something, is one meaning, or a strong belief in God or a higher being, or the doctrines of a religion based on spiritual apprehension was the word in the dictionary. I had to look up apprehension, like to understand or comprehend or grasp. So a belief based on spiritual apprehension rather than proof. And then there's, of course, the meaning of faith in the sense of a community of believers, so people of the Jewish faith or the Muslim faith, or the idea of the faithful, the followers of any particular religion or doctrine. And every religion's asking the same questions, like what are we doing here? Where do we come from? What happens when we die? And how do we be a good person and live a good life while we're here? So they all have their means of that work for various people's propensities, temperaments. But we are not asked to believe in something other than what we've verified for ourselves in Buddhism. There's a word, ehipassiko, that means come see for yourself. So try it on. See what works. See what you think. Know it for yourself. And if you're not doing that, you're not doing the Dharma, basically, is what the Buddha, that's how the Buddha taught. So yeah, doubt is one of the hindrances that I was guiding us through, the hindrances in the meditation. You might have doubt in the practice itself. Oh, this is boring. This is a waste of time. Maybe I should go back to whatever religion I grew up with, or go to Peru and do ayahuasca, or join a Wiccan coven, or whatever ideas you might have about doubting the practice itself, whatever way that shows up. I'm being a little silly here, but that kind of doubt in the practice itself, or the doubt in teachers. We probably all had teachers disappoint us in some way, or they didn't live up to whatever ideal we thought they should be. Or you may feel, as I'm talking, there's something about, the way I'm presenting something that makes you go, oh, I'm not so sure here. Or the doubt in ourselves, that, as I was saying, that can come up in all kinds of subtle ways, and it's really, really helpful to make that a little bit of focus of practice, to just to learn and notice, like, when doubt is present and when doubt is not present. And if doubt isn't present, then faith is there. And I mean, you can have both at the same time as well. There can be a little of one and a little of the other, but there's also a big doubt, like helpful doubt. So, you question some aspect of the teachings or something that you hear a teacher say, and it's like, yeah, that doesn't ring quite right for me. So that investigation factor of like, no, I think I need to look at this more. I mean, the Buddha certainly did that. He went and practiced. When he became an ascetic, he went and practiced with different teachers and would learn everything they had to offer. And they went, that's not it yet. This isn't it. So that kind of big doubt is super helpful. So just being able to notice and watch for those things. And yeah, I've just recently really come to appreciate how much, if we notice that there's a difficult experience happening in our meditation or in our in our life when we're just out and about, that you don't want to push it away, because that just is suppression. But you can intend for the helpful quality to arise. So if you're noticing doubt, it can be really helpful to just say, oh, may faith arise. May I find my way. I know I have faith sometimes. May that show itself to me. And just wait. You don't have to go looking for anything or do anything about it, but you can set an intention like that. And the more we have faith, it just is kind of a current that can carry us along. Yeah, and just reflecting back for myself on my own experience with what faith has meant to me in different times in life, and you may reflect on what it's been for you. I grew up Catholic, and so there was the idea of it's a monotheistic religion, like all the Abrahamic religions are, Judaism, Islam, and Christianity. So there's a belief in one God, and there's a concept of good and evil, and the idea that if you're good, you go to heaven, and if you're bad, you go to hell, and that it's permanent, right? It's eternal, and you have an immortal soul, and that's what goes to heaven or hell, and that lasts forever, which is very different from Buddhism. I'll say more about that in a minute. But I was just thinking about how much, like the good and bad was based on the Ten Commandments, that are like thou shalt not. And when I encountered Buddhism more deeply, the precepts, really the way that they're offered spoke to me so deeply. Like the thou shalt nots and the Ten Commandments was sort of a fear-based, like, oh, I'm going to get it wrong, and oh my God, this bad thing's going to happen, I'm going to be punished, versus the precepts being, here, pay attention in these areas of life, do whatever you do, but be awake while you do it and see what actually happens. So the precepts are a process of building your own faith in what happens when you try to have more ethical behavior. So the precepts, they overlap very much with some of the Ten Commandments. They're just offered in a much different way. You're undertaking a practice, instead of this thou shalt not thing. So undertaking the training to avoid doing harm, avoid killing, undertaking the training to watch what kind of speech you're using, and try make the effort not to use harsh false speech or harsh speech or just idle chit chat. The precept to not take what's not freely given. Thou shalt not steal, it says in the Ten Commandments. And not misuse your sexuality. That's in the Ten Commandments too. Don't commit adultery, is the way it's said there. Or not misusing intoxicants. So just that spirit of pay attention and investigate is so much. It's putting it in our own hands, and it's so much richer to me, that I'm not trying to comply with something from outside. I'm trying to use these practices to learn for myself and see what happens. And sure enough, if we are doing a lot of harm, and we're telling lies, and we're hoarding things or whatever, you sit down to meditate, and good luck having peace if you've been doing a lot of those things. It becomes very evident once you start paying attention that the quality of blamelessness that we've had ethical behavior, like, is a huge support, an essential support for being able to be peaceful, in our sits and in our life in general. And just the concept of good and evil that I grew up with, and maybe many of you did too, the difference of that it's wholesome or unwholesome was something else that also really spoke to me, and felt like I was more invited to figure it out for myself, to really look, instead of having it decided in advance, this is what's good, this is what's bad. That it's an engaged process. It's not a fixed state. It's an evolving process, having faith. Yeah, and the other thing too, the heaven or hell and for all eternity, that's also not there in Buddhism. There are these other realms in Buddhist cosmology, but they're not permanent. Like no being stays in any one realm forever. And I know a lot of us, we practice here in this, in this life here and now, and maybe the ideas of reincarnation and all the complicated questions that can come up about karma, like, maybe we don't talk about that so much. It's not central, and it's all happening right here in this life. We can go into hell realms and heaven realms right in this life, and we have an influence on that by the choices we make, by our actions. That's what karma is, that it's our choices and our actions that build whether that determine whether we spend time in heaven or hell realms within ourselves. So yes, Sharon Salzberg has a whole book called Faith, and she talks about three different parts of, this journey of faith, this building of this process that we go through. And the first one is, she talks about it as bright faith, or Gil Fronsdal calls it provisional faith. So there's something that inspires us, that we see something or someone that helps us, wakes us up, and we go, oh, that looks kind of good. Maybe that would help. We see the possibility of addressing suffering at its roots, or what it might be like to have less hardness in our heart. Like, oh gosh, if I had more kindness, that would actually be a relief. That would feel good. Oh, this, you see somebody who has those qualities and you want to go towards that. What are they doing? Oh, maybe I'll try that. So, we all have our own story about what we saw, our heavenly messenger, that gave us an idea that we could change. We could change for the better, in a way that was going to relieve us and make it so that we would cause less suffering for other people. Yeah, and Sharon Salzberg talks about it being like falling in love. It can be like falling in love. And when we have that bright faith, it's not yet centered in our own experience or our own truth, but we have enough faith to try for ourselves, to check it out. Or sometimes, people, we just, a lot of us show up, almost all of us show up because of some kind of suffering, but it might have been more out of like a desperation, and I don't know what else to do, but this seems like it might help. Let me give it a try. So another flavor of bright faith. And just even having enough faith to get us to the next, to get us to the cushion, to get us to the sit, to get us to the next breath, just that much faith. It's there all the time while we're doing this. So just being able to recognize, oh, that's there. There is something that's carrying me, that carries me through. And then practicing together, the confidence in the practice. It's if you're sitting, I just came off retreat, and I was sitting next to a guy who was so steady, just so not fidgety. He came to 6:15 sits in the morning in his pajamas, just sitting right down. Just this sense, I'm, he may not have had calm in his mind, but his presence that way, I don't know what was going on inside, but his presence just radiated a certain confidence, and it's contagious. Like we help each other with that. Just looking over it. Well, they're doing it. That's what it looks like. Maybe I can do that. So yeah, then there's also the possible pitfall of what we refer to as blind faith. So just like when you fall in love, it's like everything about the beloved is wonderful. And then that can kind of get shattered if you're stuck in that blind faith place. But then the next phase Sharon talks about is verified faith. So we've practiced enough so that we know for ourselves from our direct experience by putting things into practice, and from the Buddha's teaching, it's not just possible but necessary for everybody to know for themselves. That concept of ehi passiko, come see for yourself, is integral to Buddhist practice. If you're not engaged in your own experiment with this, you're not, it's not the Dharma. So just, does this lead me to be less grasping, less greedy, less, have less ill will in my heart? Am I like clearer and not fooling myself about things? Or am I not just spacing out and being, numbing out to things? Greed, hatred, and delusion, are those things actually, are those lessening while I'm practicing? And then, we start to feel moments of letting go and some relief, and get a sense, oh, this is a good path, and this feels good, this works. And maybe less, we become less, yoked to a teacher or the sense of the doctrine or whatever, and start to have it be guided by our own direct knowing. And no one can do it for us. We have, we do every step of it ourselves. And then the last phase of the awakening. I mean, we go in and out of these things too. They're fluid, I think. But the last phase that Sharon talks about is abiding faith or unwavering faith. So it's not a, an idea, a doctrine or whatever in our minds, and it's not something superimposed, and it becomes so deeply verified that we're just living it. Or Ajahn Chah, the Thai forest master that several of our teachers, like Jack Kornfield and a lot of other folks, ordained with in Thailand, he talks about first you hear the Dharma, and then you practice the Dharma, and then you become the Dharma, so that our lives become an expression of the Dharma, so that we would be, radiating something that other people would see and go, oh, what is that? That looks kind of good. That looks more peaceful. I think I'd like that. Yeah, and Gil Fronsdale talks about this abiding trust, like, and that there's something bigger than ourselves that's already healing and awakening us. So I was listening to a talk where he talked about, like, if we have a wound, we clean and dress the wound and keep it safe, and then it just does it. We don't do it. It heals, right? This healing happens. And that's, this sense of the life force it's just here for us, and we just have to, not mess with it too much, and just stop doing the things that get in the way, and just make room for this thing that's already here. It's the same with practice, just to protect our inner life, our inner self, this very precious, tender, wise, innate part, essence of ourselves, that if we can arrange things to keep that, like you would cover a wound, if you can make a little cocoon of sorts around yourself to make time for meditation, or not do the things that cloud the mind, or all of the ways it's possible to set our lives up so that we we protect what's already there, and just trust that it's the life force, the benevolent healing force that's within all of us and around all of us, that we can trust that we can heal and grow and awaken. It's just a natural thing to come back into wholeness if we just can set it up so that we allow it to happen. Just abiding in that trust and the deeper intelligence inside of us that knows how to heal and grow. So we keep going little by little. The benefits of the practice can start to sneak up on us. Just borrowing a phrase from 12 steps, the promises in 12 steps. Sometimes you just find you suddenly know how to handle situations which used to baffle you. Just, oh wow, something's built up in here. I've been over practicing with this over here, but wow, this got better over here. When I was on retreat just now, I went, every time I went in the dining hall, there's, just wonder, it's Spirit Rock. There's wonderful food, wonderful vegetarian food. And I just, would go and fill a very modest plate full of food, sit down and eat it. And I didn't have any feeling like, should I go back for more? Or, oh man, that one was really good. I really like that. Let me make a bowl of that and stick it in the fridge for later. That when I have done that in the past, I don't eat that. I need the next wonderful thing that they prepare. It's like some part of me, knows what a wonderful situation it is up there. But I had none of that urge to, oh, should I go back and get more? I want that. Like it was completely gone. It was like, when did that happen? It just like surprised me that I had no craving and struggle with any of that, So that's just one example of how these things can build and be another sign of, darn, this stuff works in all kinds of ways that I didn't realize were happening. And the Eugene used, I heard him quote a number of times. I don't know exactly where this is, but that the Dalai Lama, when people would ask about, evaluating your practice, seeing, am I progressing? Am I getting along the path? And that he said, yes, you should evaluate your practice, carefully evaluate your practice once every 5 or 10 years. So the sense that this is an ongoing, building thing, and it can, seem subtle until all of a sudden, like, wow, a lot of things have gone together here, and I'm, really, I've changed for the better. So I just want to read a poem from one of the early Buddhist nuns, the original practitioners in the Sangha with the Buddha. There's this book, The First Free Women. I don't know if that even shows up. It's kind of light. That's like a reimagined version of these poems that the Buddhist that the original nuns wrote. So this one is Vijaya is the name of the nun, which means victor. When everyone else was meditating, I'd be outside circling the hall. Finally, I went to confess. I'm hopeless, I said. The elder nun smiled. Just keep going, she said. Nothing stays in orbit forever. If this circling is all you have, why not make this circling your home? I did as she told me and went on circling the hall. If you find yourself partly in and partly out, if you find yourself drawn to this path and also drawing away, I can assure you, you're in good company. Just keep going. Sometimes the most direct path isn't a straight line. So yeah, the monastics go through the same thing. But let us end by gathering to in our hearts just any sense of the benefit we may have received from being here together with each other, any sense that we showing up can inspire some faith in each other and in ourselves by being here together. And any blessings, any help, any merit that we may have gathered in our time together, I'm just sharing that within ourselves, with all dimensions of our beings, letting the blessings wash through every part of us. And then sharing those blessings out from the heart in every direction for all beings. May all beings be relieved from any suffering. May all beings find safety and protection. May all beings be happy and at ease. May we all awaken together and be free. Thank you, Sangha. Look forward to the next.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.